Hello and welcome to the Vandaltron Curious World Podcast. Today I want to focus on how to quiet your mind and how to get ready to put your thoughts out on the pad, on the screen, or however. Talking about the discipline of writing and freeing your mind. I think so many people nowadays just don't read. And when you don't read, you are not expanding your vocabulary. You're not expanding your thoughts. You're not introducing yourself to new worlds. Every great writer will say, you know, writing is discipline. Everybody has a story, right? But nobody, very seldomly are we disciplined to write a first draft and then edit. Because what we do, we have a thought and we write, you know, we'll write a big giant Facebook blog, Facebook posts, or given the characters, we'll put something on Twitter and then it's gone, you know, and we don't have to let it fester. We don't have to nurture it. That thought is gone. And then we moved on to something else. And so there's really no storytelling. So what are books going to look like, you know, years from now? I've already seen the change in movies, in stories in general, how they're pretty basic, you know, and there's not a whole lot of intrigue. Maybe that's a reflection on the society that we're in now, and we have no patience, and it's all about, you know, like the, oh shit, you will not believe what just happened, and you will only find out if you click this article. You know, such short attention spans. You know, the thing about what I've realized that, you know, when you're out in nature, you realize how much none of this matters. It just doesn't matter. Like, we get so caught up in preemptive strikes with one another, or whether it's jealousy or one-upsmanship, or just wanting to, you know, the self-glorification. Put yourself in nature and you're just reminded of the serenity of story. So I hope you go out there and find some stories, regardless if you're a writer or not. My guest today is actually a writer. He goes by the name of Bobby T-Rex. He is a avant-garde writer. You know, he hangs out in the Lower East Side of New York City. And, you know, he does beat poetry. He does long-form writing. He's written a few plays. He's a self-described poet of the street, and I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do too. Without further delay, the Curious World Podcast conversation with Bobby T-Rex starts now.
You're listening to Vandaltron's Curious World Podcast. Check it out, baby.
I would first try to do writing, and while working in a restaurant and everything, and I found that a lot of my experiences and as a high school student, wrestling and doing all that stuff, like, I found a lot of aspects that, like, transitioned over into, like, my adult life. And as I started getting better at writing and trying to ingratiate myself in all things literature, and then trying to do tech, I found that when trying to master something in writing, I learned how my brain worked a little bit better than I ever did as a kid, when I was just kind of like taking in information, not really like having to set up my own way of thinking. And so as I started going into tech and started realizing, like, one, I had a certain confidence that I could pick up things. Like, I will say, like, doing multiple things does require a little bit of confidence in yourself, or else you're always going to feel defeated by that feeling, like, all this information is too daunting and blah, blah, blah. So it it was, one, like, having a little bit of belief in what I was doing, and two, like, just understanding how your brain works and how you pick up things, and, like, being patient with, like, learning something. Like, you know it's not going to come instantly, but if you have the belief that, like, if I take a month or two and, like, I commit myself mentally to learning this, then I'll eventually get there, you know? I do think there's, like, that, what's that saying? Like, 10,000 hours?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that? Yeah, and I do feel that way. I don't know if the 10,000 hours is exactly right, but I know something about committing yourself to something, learning how your brain works, can really allow you to do multiple things, because I don't think, like, we didn't grow up, or humans weren't made to do one arbitrary thing that humans made up, you know what I mean? Like, everything we've done is kind of rooted in a similar place, I think, in our head. And so, if we can just find those things that allow people to be successful across different things, then we can do it. Like, I don't think there's, like, a secret trick to anything. Like, I really think that, like, it's a lot about understanding yourself too. Like, if you can understand yourself, what you like, what motivates you, then you can achieve many different things and find some layers.
I agree. I think the key is to understand yourself. But what do you say to those people? Here's what I see. I see so many people, you know, try things, and then they don't, and they evaluate their success, or that, you know, evaluate their experience based on their success. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, well, I put in X amount of time or X amount of hours. Oh, I didn't, you know, I'm a failure. Mm-hmm. And then they'll move on to something else because, mm-hmm. you know, this idea of wasting time. How do we balance that? How do we get away from that? Because I agree with you. I think, you know, if we want to achieve things, we have to put in the hours. We have to put in the work.
Man, I really think, like, not to be redundant, but it's hard for people to understand themselves, I think. I think sometimes a lot of people kind of find these molds that are very easy for them to fit, and so, because it doesn't actually require them to really know themselves. I personally can't. I have tried to fit into a mold. I'm not trying to say I'm above that or anything like that, but I have tried to fit in molds throughout my life and felt very uncomfortable in them, so it forced me to, like, make my own mold and try to understand who I am. And I think people kind of skip that. I don't know if it happens at adulthood. Some people never really happens, and they kind of just go on living and doing what they are expected to do. So, one, you gotta know yourself and understand, like, why you're doing something. Do you like it? Because the idea of, like, wasting time, like, that's understandable. There's definitely, like, there is only so much time you have in this world, and you kind of want to do the things that you find yourself passionate about. So if you never have any passion for anything, if you don't like anything you're doing, then, like, of course it's going to feel like wasting time. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, some things will feel like a waste of time if you don't find any joy in it. So
I think a lot of it is the fear of failure. Yeah. So you brought up, so one thing that we both have in common, we were both high school wrestlers. And I remember the, you know, when you're, I mean, I've spoken to professional fighters, mm-hmm. professional MMA fighters, and they've all, you know, a lot of them have said wrestling practice is the hardest, you know, that's the hardest. Like, yeah, and I remember, like, be on the verge of puking after certain practices. But I remember my coach said, you know, a lot of people fail because it's, you know, you get pinned not because of a maneuver, because you mentally break down. It's mm-hmm. that fear of, I don't want to get hurt, mm-hmm. or I don't want to get embarrassed. I don't want to get outpointed. You know, that 15-point lead, I'm just going to end it now. And there's something that breaks in you mentally. Why do you think people are so afraid of that?
I think it's a little bit of our culture. There's this kind of like, I don't know, it's one, you're expected to have a level of success depending on where you come from. Whether you come from like middle class or, you know, I think there is certain expectations. Like you do this, you have a job and blah, blah, blah. Like, and so because of these expectations that are kind of like, a lot of them are outdated too. Like a lot of things that we expect of ourselves are super outdated because this world's so different. And so if they don't achieve these things, then it's kind of like, what am I doing? You know? And I think that's part of it. I think there's also something with like, again, like optimization about this country and like how we've kind of lived throughout the last 100 or so years. Like, I think American culture lately has kind of tended towards more like specialists, and like, you don't want to do two things because then you're just going to suck at, you're going to suck at both things instead of be really good at one, you know? And
yeah, this idea of I'm the best at this.
Yeah, yeah. We always want to be the best in the world and blah, 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 and like on top of everything, which is great, but sometimes it removes you from being, from thinking differently, thinking outside of the box, and instead of like, instead of people, I kind of find like people are always trying to reach a bar instead of like have their own path, you know what I mean? Like, instead of like making their own personal goals, like they don't really have that. It's just like kind of like these goals that have been around forever and that everybody should achieve them, and not really thinking about like why are we doing it, what's the end goal of it, all those kind of things.
Do you find that a lot in art?
I think it really depends on
what long.
I think it really depends what you look like, too. I think
what you look like.
Yeah, totally. It's like
you mean labels.
Yeah, labels and like who you are and what you do and like. So I remember you asked me a long time ago my inspirations and everything like that, and I mentioned Kanye, and this was like right after the Trump thing, so it was very like, like, oh no, why am I saying that? But like I had to say it, and mainly because like, I don't know, I find his story very interesting, especially for black people, black artists, or people who can kind of feel this glass ceiling, because he is someone who was a producer and then a rapper and then all these fashion things and blah blah blah, and a lot of his like public rants and all these things kind of express how people want him in a box, and how, and he expresses too like how like they want rappers to stay in a box and only do these things and don't get too good at everything else, don't dip your toe in that because we don't really need you outside of that space. And I mean, there's different reasons for that. I don't think it's just like we don't want black people to spread their wings. I think there's a lot of ego in art, and there's a lot of ego because, one, I don't think the general population understands sometimes what it takes to be good at something artistic. They think it's just like this natural thing that people just do, and there's like a lot of like hard work behind it. So if you see somebody else from another field saying like, "Ooh, I want to do this now," like, oh, I like that's nice, it's gonna be a little fun for me, and it's almost like I understand why people would feel like disrespected to think that you can just enter another field, but at the same time,
Trey Bryan brain surgery.
Yeah, no, but like
I've seen a Chicago Hope ER.
Yeah, like I get that, I get that, but I also think that like, but there's also other artists out there who do a multitude of things, like who are just kind of like not, maybe not celebrities, but they're artists, like, and they use different mediums to do their art, and if, or they do photography and they do writing, like someone like Patti Smith, like she did a multitude of things, like yeah, she was a musician, but she was also a really good writer, and like has, I don't know, just has this very like wide effect on the culture at large, especially in New York, like just. It wasn't just her music, it was more of just like who she was as an artistic person, But that's rare. Like, not a lot of people get to do that. And I think we'd benefit if we let people do that. If we let people explore different things. Like, you don't have to be the best at everything. Like, what is even the best? You know what I mean?
Well, especially when it comes to art. Because yeah. that means you're... It becomes competitive.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, I've always felt that it was kind of ridiculous that we give awards out to art. I mean, it's not a, like, horse race or anything.
I know, but they need it.
I feel as an artist, have uh-huh. you ever been? Do you ever felt that you've been labeled or people have kind of projected what they want you to your message to be based on, you know, the way they perceive you?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started writing, I don't think people thought I was stupid or anything, but I don't think they thought I could write. Before that, I played a lot of guitar and stuff, and so people kind of saw that, like, okay, like, he's into those kind of artsy things. But I feel like it took a while for people to even consider that I write at all. And then after that, and like getting into tech and doing all that, people were kind of just like, what, like.
What is he? I can't pin him down.
Like, why? And for me personally, it was like, yes, I want to be a great writer, but I also, like, if I specialize only in writing, part of me is going to be forced to not necessarily write the way I want to, or write in the, like, kind of structure that I want to. And you kind of have to, like, you kind of just have to go with what pays, like whether, like, I'm more into like writing short stories and fiction and like something a little bit more long form. But it seems like a lot of the writers nowadays, they have to start off by doing like short form blog posts and magazines and articles and stuff like that, and kind of write about things that are not really maybe what they first thought they were going to be doing when they became a writer, or doing like a puff piece for some kind of magazine. Like, it's some of it didn't really seem attractive to me, and I felt like, well, one, that seems really great, forcing my art to fit a mold that sells constantly, not just sell one time or sell a few times. Like, the idea that you have to like write stuff all the time, just because that's how our media works nowadays, that you have to write a lot of stuff, and that may not be what you want it to be. So that was really unattractive to me, and kind of like turned me off to writing as a career. So I was like, and also I met other writers. I remember going to a reading in, like, I think Prospect Park or something, somewhere around that area, and there was this reading and met a bunch of writers, and like they were lawyers and some were journalists, which is obviously kind of in the same vein, but like they were doing other things, and it made me realize, like, oh, okay, like what I'm feeling about like strictly being a writer only for however long it takes to feel like an accomplished writer may not be what I want to do, and it was kind of limiting. Mainly because I have like all these other things I'm into, and that I may not get real profit from, but they may feed into other things. Like, they may feel a little freeing because of it, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a big thing too. Is like profit. Like, you need to make money, and that's just the way the world works. And that's fine, but the idea that you have to just do one thing to make a living is kind of unattractive to me, given what actually sold.
Right. It becomes very challenging when you put commerce and you put that onto something you would do for free.
Yeah.
And then when you have to do it to as a means, then there's a potential for a compromise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to your point, I think, and this is something that I wanted to ask you about. I think a lot of writers, particularly, you know, when you have not just blogs, but, you know, even established writers who are bestsellers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always, okay, your book, your last book was this.
Yeah.
What's next? Yeah. What do you got? And so there's that, and I guess that's for every artist, but I find that is exceptional for writers.
Yes.
With this day and age, and I see this across the board with all mediums, with music and filmmaking, so there's not as many gatekeepers. You know, you and I can self-publish a book and put it on Amazon. So there's less gatekeepers, but now it seems like there's more content, and not all of it is good.
Yeah, yeah.
So how does your insight of technology inform your creative process? Or maybe it's vice versa.
That's a interesting one. I mean, I feel like the creative process, I feel like technology has forced me to kind of consider the idea of platforms more, and like what they actually mean and like the importance to them. Like, to your point, like, because of the internet age of information and how the bar is kind of lowered, the idea of platforms is really, really important now. Like, you can't just be a writer. Like, if you're a writer on, like, if you write for Fox News and you write for New York Times, that's like a whole different thing, you know what I mean? Like, the platform really matters now. Not that it didn't matter before, but we're getting to a point now where there's so much content that you have to validate yourself through a platform a little bit. Like,
sometimes people have done it in a very salacious way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's tough, and I will say that tech has also helped me be like kind of a better collaborator, mainly because something about your own creative work, there's a lot of ego there, and like, you don't want people to touch stuff and like,
right,
and edit that, and very sensitive to certain things. And I think technology has kind of like made me understand, I don't want to say understand the consumer, but understand that you kind of need to compromise a little bit. Like, you can't just have this really like esoteric work that's tough on people to understand. And like, I think as an artist, sometimes you have to understand what you're giving your audience and what you're like keeping under the hood so that they can discover it later.
Mm-hmm.
And like, some artists are more generous with their work. Like, they'll give you everything up front and like, there it is, that's everything, and like, that's it. And then there's other artists in whatever medium, they're like, no, this is gonna be tough, like this is gonna be a little difficult, like you should have a little bit more training or history behind whatever you're consuming in order to really appreciate this, you know? Like, there's a difference between Of Mice and Men and Infinite Jest. Like,
can you have that same approach with your work in tech?
Yes, I think if you understand who your audience is, like, I think that's a huge, huge part of tech, is understanding who your audience is. Like, when people make apps, they have to have a use case or a user story behind it, because if you can't, and that's really the emphasis on, like, if you don't understand your audience and who it's for, then why are we even doing this? And I think that's kind of forced me to look at my writing and be like, who is this for? Like, and it's a little bit more vague in art, obviously, because like, it's not just statistics and somebody else can pick that up, and it's like more about life experiences and relating to something and all that. But it has forced me to kind of like look at things and be like, who is this actually for? Like, is this for a kid like me? Is this for
who's the end user?
Yeah. Yeah, the end user. Who's the end user at the end of the day? And so like, yeah, you have to kind of like have an idea in tech of like who you're giving this to, like who are you making this for? Are you making it for someone like yourself? Are you making it for someone like your mom or something like that? Like, it's, that has to be determined, or else they're not really gonna finish making the app.
How do you feel about what technology is doing from a I guess not necessarily just a creative lens, but I guess in general, you know.
You know, I think technology, everything has its good and its bads, but if we're going to talk about to me as a black person, I think technology has been really awesome. I think it is.
Is it just for black people?
But for people of color, I can only speak for black people, but like for people of color, I think it's a huge equalizer. I think a lot of barriers have been broken, like socially. It's weird to say that because of how, like, the way the world is right now and how America is really divided, but I feel like there's a lot of things that were kind of just like in the unknown, like I don't know, like even like Black Lives Matter is based off a platform that like people that probably newspapers probably wouldn't have picked up if this was 1990, you know, like they probably would have been there in like an article and then just kind of like washed away. And now that we kind of have like these platforms for our own voices, I think it's been great. Like there's a lot of negative things, but There's a lot of negative things about it, but I think that minorities have really done well because of it. Like,
so to your point, what you just said, do you think the internet or social media or whatever have created platforms that are bringing people together, or more solidifying groups?
It's solidifying groups, but that's technically bringing people together. I mean, it's tough because in a way it's like minorities don't have to feel like the minority in certain places, like even Trump supporters. I think something that people don't realize is that Trump supporters are the minority. Like, I know there's a lot of people who voted for Trump, blah, 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 but like real Trump supporters are actually the minority. It's just that I think they get, one, there's Russian bots out there, so, like, that helps. But, like, they've always been a minority. It's just that their voices are so amplified because of these platforms that we actually are thinking, like, you know what? Like, these people may not be the minority, but they still are. And I think the same goes for, like, people of color. Like we are the minority, but, like, our voices are starting to be amplified because it's, like, one, there's an echo chamber. Two, people can look in and be like, wow, that's actually really interesting. And like, and then people can see commonalities between each other. Like, Asians can see the commonalities between black people and like how we can grow together. Because like, in cities, like there's a deep relationship, and like also like in hip hop, there's a deep relationship between Asians and African Americans, and like there's a history there. It may not have always been noticed, but because of things like internet, and there's different, like, especially in Brooklyn, there's different like collectives out there, and where you like kind of like realize these things, like
dance, food, and martial arts for sure.
Yeah, like, it's always been there, but I think it's kind of like it's kind of just been like, well, like whatever, that's like a small group of people, but now these people can actually see each other and like oh, like this exists, like it's not just me, you know. So I think it's great, and I think we just kind of need to understand what's really happening in the world and not get too consumed with what's in the internet.
I agree. I think I think the internet poses a lot of capabilities where, you know, if you wanted to watch cat videos all day, you could. You could also, if you had issues with like your sink, you could find out how to fix it on the internet. Mm-hmm. Or if you could, you know, buy a new car or meet people of your religious background. What I'm cautious about is how this affects the creative process. Mm-hmm. When I was, you know, being a writer requires isolation, and I don't mean physical. You could be in a park, but I don't think.
Yeah,
no. It's not a collective thing unless maybe you're collaborating, but it's usually you have to have an isolation in your brain, and I think we sometimes get into a habit of, you know, if you ever go to like a public place, like a cafe, a bar, airports, or even or the best place. Just observing people in public, and they don't. I think people have lost the ability to be by themselves, and so they're playing on, they're watching something on an iPad or playing on their phone, whatever it is. Maybe they're reading an article or saying, you know, coordinating when who they're going to meet with. But my point is, we are all constantly plugged in, and I'm not commenting on that because that's the flow of where we're going. But from a creative perspective, I feel like there's no reset, and I'm starting to see that in the output, in across the board of movies and music, and it seems to be there's. As we were saying before, there's more content. I'm seeing a lack of originality and daring.
Yeah, I think people are definitely more cautious than ever to, like, they don't want to feel out of sync. Like, that's really the thing. Like, I couldn't imagine, like, adults knowing the same songs as teenagers. And, like, you know, like, they just now we all kind of, like, consume similar things. Like, they kind of, like, know it more. Like, I know what the kids listen to because I go on SoundCloud. Like, right. You know what I mean? And we have all these things and metrics to kind of keep us in the loop. And I guess in terms of, like, creativity, I don't think we've changed. I think we're getting caught up in stuff and we're kind of forgetting some things. Like, I think something about the internet and constant connection is we kind of have a very short memory. We have a super short memory, and so we can kind of keep convincing ourselves that things are new when they're really not. They're probably not that new. They're just kind of like revamped and kind of given to us in a new package. And I think I haven't written for a few months, so I haven't done this, but like when I was writing like a lot consistently, I would delete my Twitter and Instagram, or just delete it off my phone, not my account, but just delete it off my phone so I don't have that like natural impulse.
Are you crazy?
I'm not gonna do that. That's insane. But like I delete it off my phone just so I can get rid of that impulse to like constantly click on it whenever I do open my phone. Like, you ever like look at the weather and now you're deep in whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm so guilty of this. I'll look up something. Somebody will text me, and I'll reply, and I'm like, what the fuck did I even try to look up? Maybe it's the weather. Like, I'm going to go outside, and, like, I'll get a text, or, what the fuck? Now I got to look at the weather again, because exactly. I forgot.
Yeah. I think our memories are feeling shorter.
Like, I don't know any phone numbers.
I don't know. No, I don't even know my mama's. I don't even remember that. So, I don't know. I don't know, but, like, I really think there's this part in have you ever read 100 Years of Solitude?
Mm-hmm.
And the part where they have the banana company come in, and then there's like this like constant rain and like people stop sleeping.
Vaguely, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a few years, but like that part stuck in me because like it's a long book. But they were always partying or something like that. They were always festive, but they were never sleeping. And so, like, since they were never sleeping, they would kind of forget things. And their memories would kind of, like, fade away because they were never, like, turned off. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I believe that.
Yeah.
Sleep deprivation,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, a metaphor. That could be a metaphor for kind of, like, how we're consuming things. Like, we're never, like, turned off. So, like we're just running out of space for everything. Like, we don't just take a break and, like, we don't let things settle. And so I think you do have to let things settle. You kind of have to breathe for a second, walk away. Like, at least for something I write, like, sometimes I, like, just stop for a second, walk away, and then look back at it. Because sometimes you're just caught up in a moment, and you need to not be caught up in a moment to really
say I have things. To do that now with even, like, texts that I write, mm-hmm. or email, well, especially emails. Mm-hmm. I have to, like, rewrite, and I'm always finding mistakes.
Yeah.
I have to, like, go back and, like, oh, geez, no, wait a minute, that's... It's, you know, you, not your, it's you are, yeah. You know, or, you know, stuff like that. And I think I read recently that the average person checks their Instagram 40 times within each hour.
That's very possible.
Yeah, I think it's probably more.
Yeah.
When I'm on the train, I've noticed this transition. You know, people were reading books, and then they were reading. And I guess people still read like Kindles, and now, and you know, occasionally people will be on their phone and they're playing Fruit Ninja or the one with the little balls.
Oh, yeah.
Or
I haven't played that one, but that looks interesting.
But I see a lot of people on like social media.
Yeah.
And looking at photo, you know, Instagram or Facebook.
No, that they don't even have service.
And I guess they're just like, saved and they're scrolling at nothing. But yeah, I think it's just that dopamine of, oh, I got a like. Oh, I got another like. And again, I'm not criticizing that because I think it's so easy to say to do that. But I'm guilty of it. We all are, right?
I mean, we should definitely keep in mind that they made these things with that intention.
Yeah.
That's for sure. They've definitely done research and had some of the brightest minds make platforms that are addicting. And so I think that might change. I'm hoping that changes. But I kind of feel like either the next generation is going to look at us and be like, what? How are they doing? Like, why are they so obsessed with these things? Like, why are we creating things that, like, don't really help us? And maybe, I get why it's there. Like, it makes money. Like, these are the best places for ads ever. Like, if you want to grab people's attention, like, this is the best way to do it. And hopefully we'll find a new way to, like, grab people's attention so they can buy stuff. But
do you think about privacy?
Yeah, I do think about privacy a lot. I don't, like, I have Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, but I don't share on those a lot. I don't post a lot.
No, I don't just mean that. I just mean, you like, all right, for instance, I remember when I upgraded to, I get a new phone and I was using the maps and I was kind of saying like, and I remember I went to my destination, and then the phone asked me, "Do you want a route?
Oh yeah.
Do you want a route to go home?
Yeah.
How do you know where I live?
Yeah, that's creepy. That's creepy, and that's definitely gonna change. I think that's definitely gonna change. Just some, either. I think companies are kind of going over the edge and not realizing that they're like, you're crossing a line. I think they kind of sit in these rooms and like create these things and get excited about the technology, but don't actually consider like the user. And I think how we kind of create for the user is going to change, because people are going to feel differently about how things are in their home. I hate, like, I will not, my family has an Alexa. Yeah, and I hate it. I won't use it. It's like a thing that I'm like, there's literally a microphone.
Yeah.
Listening on everything we're saying.
They did an experiment. I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt. No. They did an experiment where the music was playing and somebody whispered to Alexa, like, Alexa, I want to have sex with you. And she said, I can't do that. So it's hearing everything.
Yeah.
As soon as you come in and you're saying, like, you know, hey guys, it's tracking. Hey guys, I just went to Barclays Center. Boop, 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 boop,
boop. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know when that's gonna change. I feel like it's going to. I feel like we've already like crossed the line a little bit, and the next generation is gonna like be like, dude, like, no, like, you can't just like find wherever we are. Like,
I think people are just so enraptured by this convenience.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, most. I don't have one, but I would imagine it'd be pretty. It'd be like a fun thing.
Convenient though. I feel like it's not.
Do you ask like, what's the weather like? And
absolutely not, because I have this.
I have a phone. Well, that's you. But like, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more of a gimmicky thing. I don't know how useful it is. Like, is it really that? Is life really that tough for me now? Like, this is like the second wave of advanced technology that we've been dealing with, right? Like, we've already had smartphones for a while that can have already simplified our lives, and we've had the internet. We've kind of already gotten used to these things, and now we're kind of entering this like new wave of like invisible technology and blah blah blah. And I just think people are kind of thinking about it wrong, because there's more stuff that's gonna happen. Like the whole Russia and Facebook hack thing and all that, and like the Equifax security breach and all these things. Like, they're probably gonna keep happening. I don't see them stopping.
People get upset for like 48 hours. Yeah. I remember Equifax was like, everybody was like, holy shit. And then nobody, I don't think anybody cares anymore.
No. And I feel like something's gonna happen where people are gonna be like, alright, this is enough. Like, we can't live like this where everything's out there. Like, where the world's so small that someone...
Yeah, but that same person would be like, but I'm not giving up my Alexa.
I don't know. I think there's something on the horizon. I could be wrong. The way things are trending, it looks like it. But I am on the belief that, like, we get excited about things when we think of things as constant progression. When really it's like, it goes up and then it goes down a little bit because people feel a certain way about things. And, like, that's too much. Like, I don't know. I feel like everything doesn't move linearly. It kind of moves up.
I am kind of baffled by what sticks and what doesn't. Remember Google Glass?
Yeah, I knew that was. I was working at a restaurant. I was working at ABC Kitchen, and
somebody came in with
a bunch of people. I think because it was kind of near Google. I think the Google office is kind of near there, and we'd have these people come in and they'd have it and you'd just be like, you look so stupid. Like,
it looks like Judge Dredd or something, yeah. Right? It's kind of like, it's a visor over one eyeball.
That doesn't look cool. Like,
they started outlawing it, right? Like, because people were recording everything they were seeing.
Oh, I didn't know that. I wasn't sure of that. But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. You gotta make it look cool. They had the Snapchat one, too. Like, the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think that's working.
Have you ever done VR?
You know what? I have a VR thing sitting in my room, and I haven't touched it.
Have you tried it?
I tried it once for the holidays when I was visiting family, and somebody my little cousin got it for Christmas or something, and she was showing it to me, and I don't know. It's cool. There's something about trying to bring all these digital things to the physical and actually make it feel physical, that seems like a big hurdle that I don't know if we're completely there yet. What I do think is cool and really useful that's going to catch on even more is the AR thing, is where I think IKEA might use it, where you look up some piece of furniture and then you can put it in your, you can use your camera and then put the furniture in your room and see how it would actually look.
Oh, wearing the...
No, not even wearing. I don't know if you use Snapchat. I don't use it like that. But you know if you use Snapchat and on the phone, your face can change.
I only know the dog ears.
But think of that.
Oh, you're saying
it's on your screen. Yeah. It's on your screen and then it's there. Right. Which is cool. That actually seems super useful and I'd love to actually use that. But that's different. It's something about putting this on and flailing around.
So Abdul has that, and I remember I put it on and he had me play a video game, and I thought this is kind of stupid. But then he had because it was all the graphics were kind of blocky. Mm-hmm. But then I was on a mountain in Brazil, and that shit was freaky. I'm an adult, and I've seen these things before, but I was just whoa, and I was tilting my head, and the camera was tilting, and I was just thinking, man, even 10 years from now, people are gonna say, they'll look at it and say, what are you fucking, a primate?
Yeah. We're that's beyond that. That's how when people first saw movies, and how they're freaking out.
The train's coming, everybody's leaving the theater.
I think VR... Don't get me wrong, I think VR is going to play a role in our future. It's going to be around. I think they have to find a way to make it, weirdly enough, I think they have to figure out a way to make it social, to actually, integrate other people. Because even our technologies now, Call of Duty, it is
social. I think that's the idea, right? Yeah. Incorporating AI with it. And we may be on the precipice of... I mean, if machines can... extrapolate our conversations and provide us what we're just kind of talking about, then That's the next level.
I was, so I went to this thing. It was on machine learning and AI, and it was this guy from IBM who was like talking to us about it. And he pretty much was like, yeah, we're already kind of in that world. Like, we're already in an AI world. We just kind of don't see it, but a lot of the things that are happening are AI. Like, I find, like, the financial system is a lot of it. There's a lot of AI that goes into that. And he was just talking about a bunch of different things and, like, proving, like, yeah, like, a lot of things that are happening now, like, we're there. Like, it's just us kind of, like, accepting it and understanding, like, how we play a role. Like, I don't think AI is a thing where it's going to, like, replace us. I think we have to embrace living side by side with it.
I've seen Terminator. I know how this ends.
I mean, but that's different though, because I think they try to replace humans. Like, they.
Well, isn't that gonna happen?
I mean, I'm not gonna say no. I'm not gonna say no because things are crazy right now. I don't know, but I mean, I think to do a lot of things we want to do in the future, we kind of need it. Like, eventually, someone's gonna figure out, like, how to really embrace having AI in your life and not, like, not freaking out about it and, like, it being kind of safe.
It's weird about, from what I've been reading about AI, is there's certain things that it can do really well. You know, reboot do an autocorrect of your computer, mm-hmm. and clean it up. Mm-hmm. Can't clean your apartment. Because that's more of a human function. Yeah. But I think that's what's missing is that learning component. And I think once that's in place, then I think we're just going to go off onto this other tangent.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are already really... I think also older generations are really struggling with, like, how technology has kind of been in their lives. I was reading this article about how people always had this threat of, like, since the Industrial Revolution, of how machine is going to replace humanity. And, like, there's always been cycles of it. It may seem very real now because we're in this, like, super advanced technological world, it feels like, where so many leaps have been made in a few years. But I think that there's already a lot of instances, like all those Black Mirror episodes.
I was just gonna say,
Black Mirror. Like, I think sci-fi, if we're gonna talk about it, is only a reflection of, like, current times. I don't think it's people looking into the future. I kind of feel like, I mean, if I was writing sci-fi,
some of those things are actually kind of evolving.
True, like, but
you've seen them all.
Yeah.
You know that one where with Dallas Bryce Howard, where she's in that world and she has to be evaluated by likes. That is happening.
Yeah.
That's like happening with Uber.
Yeah, for sure. And that's there already. And I was listening to somebody talk on, like, some podcast, and they were talking about how truckers, they already are kind of like truckers and, like, Amazon people who work for, like, in the Amazon warehouse and stuff like that, their lives are already kind of run by AI. Like, the boss doesn't delegate as much anymore. They put a computer in your truck, or they put, like, sensors in the warehouse, and there's strict timelines for everything.
Yeah, I think they get shocked. There's like a collar or anklet or something. They have to do it in, like, 2 minutes. It's like, they get...
That's crazy. But that's a reality already. It's not some far off thing. Like, that is a reality, like, people are living. And so, especially if you don't even understand technology like that, you're just a person who is from middle of nowhere, Wisconsin, from a farm, and then you start a trucking job, and then all of a sudden you have this thing beeping at you telling you what to do and, like, take a break right now and then drive right now. Like, that is in its own way, like, some weird dystopia for people. And so I think the real risk is, like, it's not necessarily getting rid of people, but having AI control people because we don't want to, like, interact with humans ourselves.
Okay, so what about self-driving cars?
I think you're probably always gonna have a human there. Like the car might be driving, but the human's probably always going to be there checking on it and like.
No, you okay? So we're in a car, uh-huh. and it's driving us yeah. to say we want to go to Atlantic City, right? So we just punch in the you know we're, our destination, and we can you.
So let
you know who's really an advocate for this is the alcohol industry, because you and I can just we can sit true. Back and we can just drink on our way to Atlantic City.
That's true.
Though here's the issue though. So who's going to sponsor these things? All right, so it. It becomes insidious because the route can take you to certain places. So let's say like Chick-fil-A is a sponsor of the GPS. Oh, we'll just have them route them toward like three Chick-fil-A's in a row.
Yeah.
I'm still going to Atlantic City. And so obviously like then subconsciously, right? And maybe I'll get ads on my XM radio. Here's the real issue that and this is the I think the final hurdle when it comes to AI and cars in particular. So if somebody darts out into the street, let's say there's an elderly white woman and a young Asian kid, right? And so I have to swerve and I can only hit one. I know which one I'm hitting. I'm just kidding. But what does the car do?
These people should learn how to cross the street first of all.
what does the car do? And is it based on the programmer? And is the programmer saying, yeah, fuck those old white people?
I don't know. That's a tough one. Wasn't that in a movie where like the character, his daughter died in a car crash, and I think it was like iRobot or something. Like he was in a car crash with his daughter, and a robot came to save him, and they looked at the chances of who's more likely to survive, and he got the dad. They saved the dad instead of the daughter.
Really?
Yeah.
Will Smith?
It was some movie like that, yeah. It was either that or like Minority Report, something future where like it's this first scene starts off with like a car accident and then you go on from there.
Oh.
It's something like that. I think it might be iRobot.
I've been kind of falling back. I haven't watched a Will Smith movie in a while.
It's been years. I don't know why I even remember that. But well, so that's one thing too though, is that I think a lot of things that we worry about with AI technology is not really about the AI technology, it's about like how it's like human nature putting its own like biases. Like the whole thing you said about Chick-fil-A, like that's more of a capitalism taking over your life kind of thing.
But I need this to be funded, right? So you're going to pay me. Well, I'm going to create this, and there's a revenue stream. Yeah, I'm going to do it.
I think I honestly think we should be more worried about how we treat ourselves, how we treat others than.
Yes, I think that, but that's more of a moral issue, yeah. And it's hard to regulate that unless we do regulate that.
I mean, there's a lot of things that are incentivized in our culture that aren't the most wholesome.
Right, but it's going to be very hard to push back when I'm saying like, look, I this is a revenue stream for me, and this is why I can provide this service for you.
That's fair. I mean. If the worst that come out of AI is that I get rerouted to Chick-fil-A, then I guess that's okay. I gotta start thinking for myself. I gotta turn off that AI and like really like you know what? I'm gonna get that Big Mac.
We'll just announce like old white ladies get clear yourself from the street when Bobby's driving.
Yeah, we put that bumper sticker on there. Like I don't stop for old ladies. Or something like that.
Well, circling back to the creative process, is there certain rituals that you have, or certain things that you put yourself in a mindset of when you prepare to create something?
Yeah, I mean, to create something, one, I have to like literally think and put myself in the mind and like. Say I'm going to be doing this because it's very easy to get distracted and like just because I don't know there's something about creativity and like how you can just set a goal for yourself but like the goal is really arbitrary and doesn't really like I don't know if it really helps you actually accomplish it but I will kind of like structure my whole day around the creative thing. Even if it's not doing the creative thing, I'm doing it so that I'm ready for the creative thing. Like if I'm planning on writing 1,000 words in a day or something, then I'm gonna wake up at a certain time. I'm gonna have my breakfast. I'm gonna think and like maybe listen to some music. I'm gonna work out so I don't feel like tense or anything and just kind of like sit down and like So it's more of a, when I'm going to do something creative, I really try to structure my day around that creativity, even if it's not necessarily only being creative. I think that may be a little different from like a lot of other things I do in life, but when it comes to creativity, like everything has to be kind of clicking.
What does it start with you? Is it the narrative? Is it a certain characters? Is it a theme? And then what's the seed?
The seed for me is wanting to talk about something. Like I want to say something. Like I want to say something. Like, so there's like some, the last thing I wrote, I was writing like a short story, and it's about a kid in New York who is kind of just like a fantasy version of like when I was like 19, 20 and like working in restaurants and kind of like exploring New York for the first time. And basically I started out writing that by thinking about how people move, how millennials especially kind of are forced to move away from home and like in order to like do what they want and have these dreams, and how like that need to kind of like leave the home, because there's only so many cities now that like where you can really get those dream jobs, those jobs you always wanted. Like, so I kind of started out with the premise of like, man, a whole bunch of millennials feel very lost because they're away from home and they have to do all these things and discover themselves, and it's kind of different from like past generations a little bit. And I want to write about like how leaving home can change you. And so that's where it starts. It's usually like something like I want to say, but like it doesn't sound great talking about it literally. So you kind of make a whole story that's just a big metaphor for what that
an exploration like. Yeah. of an idea.
Yeah, exactly. And so if I don't have anything to say, it's really, really hard. If I can't think of like what point I'm trying to get across, then it's almost impossible for me to write anything. So.
Well, because writing is obviously it's words, right? Mm-hmm. We're reading words, and then you know it's unlocking things of our imagination. Are you more audio or visual? Like, do you feel like your writing is more audio or visual?
That's interesting, because I didn't know what kind until recently. Like I didn't even know like how I learned until like recently. And by recent, I mean like in the last like year or so. And I realized that like I'm more of like a visual person, like a little bit of audio, but more like a visual person. So like when I write, I'm very into describing a scene and like letting people get caught up in like the details of what a person sees, rather than like heavy dialogue or something like that. Like that's, I think it's really important for me to kind of paint how people see things. Like I was thinking this the other day of how like a lot of things in our world are not, a lot of things we talk about in the world are not literal. Like we don't talk about kissing us, smashing our face together. Like we talk about it in a completely different way.
Some people do,
and that says a lot about them and how they kiss. But I think like there's, and I don't think people understand that like a lot of things in this world are not like written or explained literally. I mean, I think that's why I like Kurt Vonnegut a lot, because he had this weird way of actually being very literal with how he wrote about things, like very like he can talk about a Russian killing a Nazi soldier in a very like almost plain literal way, instead of putting all this like fancy words and making it and talking about the blood.
You talking about
blood.
Slaughterhouse?
Yeah, Slaughterhouse
yeah.
Five.
And yeah, like, it's almost like clinical.
Yeah, it's clinical, and that has an effect because the way we talk about war is so like glamorized, and that. The fact that he wrote it, like, he did the opposite of what a lot of people do, and he just wrote it very plainly and literally, and to see, like, wow, like, that's almost not, like, it's, there's nothing really beautiful about it, like.
Yeah, I think, I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's the pitfall of a lot of novice writers, and I've been guilty of this, is you have this juicy scene and you want to like you want to punch it up and then you just it becomes like some fluff.
Yeah,
you know, just that. Like, you know, he comes home and he sees his lover, you know, distraught, and you know he's you would never if you saw that melodrama, you'd be like, oh, so why would you write it like that? Yeah. Where, you know, he's like all these fluff words and yeah, I think there needs to be a balance. I think, you know, you're writing and you're creating a portrait of something, and you want to lead the reader to a destination, but you don't want to spoon feed them.
Yeah.
Because I think that becomes like a Harlequin novel.
Yeah.
Where like, oh God, okay, I get it. All right, he's upset.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think anything you take creatively, it always changes. The rules always change. Like, I remember I used to, like, as a kid, like, watch a lot of YouTube videos of, like, celebrities talking about, like, how they did something. And, like, and there's always, like, some, like, bland, like, response, like, how did you do it? You know, just believe, and blah, blah, blah. And I always get so frustrated. I'm like, yo, that doesn't help me. Like, yeah. But then I realized at a certain point, like, oh, like, there is no rules to any of this. Like, people are just kind of, like, figuring it out. So, like, it's more about, like, your mindset and how you approach things rather than, like, the hard and fast rules of, like, doing this and doing that. Because then, if art was like that, then it would be so boring. Like, you'd have the same kind of people.
And, exactly.
Yeah, and you don't want that. So, I would say, like, for writing, like, you kind of have to... One, your job is to gauge what the world is and, like, tell people how you see it or how other people see it, or, you know, like, you kind of have to have some kind of, like, intake before you put anything out, you know, or else it's just like, what are you doing? Like, you can't make things in a box. Like, you have to kind of, like, work with what you have around the world and go from there.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna get you out on this. Mm-hmm. What are some works of art, and it could be a song, an album, a painting, a book, a poem, a movie, that you point to and go, you know what, that really that's had like such an influence on me.
Oh man, that is a tough one.
It doesn't have to be
a few things.
No, I have just a few.
I have a few. I mean, my favorite movie is that has like stuck with me as my favorite. Like, they always switch, but There Will Be Blood by Paul Thomas Anderson is my favorite movie because it is a great allegory for capitalism, in my opinion, and like kind of what it does to people, and like its dehumanizing effects and how it isolates people, and how, and also like the sound and all the little stuff that makes movies great. Like, it's I think it's like, you know, grade A. And then I'll go all genres or all mediums. I think my favorite book would probably have to be Native Son by Richard Wright. That one was like the first, because I'm gonna be honest, I grew up being very like just kind of like tired of like the whole black narrative. Like, when you grow up, like the black narrative is kind of like struggle and blah blah blah, and like, and there's, and the idea of like Black History Month, and like it's all condensed to these like little fluffy stories.
It's a Maya Angelou quote.
Yeah, and I was like, that is not cool. Like, I don't really care about that. But like, when I started getting around like 17, 18, and started like really exploring somebody that's like not perfect, like that's flawed, and like, and how they go through the world flawed is like, was like really, really eye opening for me.
So not to go off on a tangent, but the people that were trying to educate you about Black History Month, were they not non-black?
I would say both. There's the whole thing with like, it's really hard for me to relate to somebody doing the perfect thing all the time. Like, it's just hard. Like, there's this kind of like some black people have this thing with respectability politics and how like you should never do something wrong, you should hold yourself to a very high standard, and like, you know, like there's almost like no room for mistakes or exploring different things. Like, you always have to stay straight and narrow. Don't ever have a drink of beer or something like that. Like this, like
because you're representing.
Because you're representing, and also because the stakes are a little bit higher. Just to be fair, like you could if someone smoked weed, if you're a black person that smoked weed and then got caught by the cops, that's probably a different scenario for a white person that smoked weed and caught
absolutely.
By the cops. So I understand where it comes from, but I don't like living my life in reaction to what white people do. You know what I mean? Like, I'd like to live my life as, like, a person, not, like, as a black person in America. And so, the examples of, like, Martin Luther King and blah, 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 were, like... And they never tell you all the bad things that Martin Luther King did.
Right. So, that, like, that could be a different podcast that's a whole different thing.
But
when I learned about all the, like, the infidelity he had, that actually made me like him more.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's a human being. Yeah,
exactly. And, like, that's what I was waiting for. Like, just someone who is human and, like, and they... And, like, they do wrong, but they can still, like, live. Like, they can still go about and be that person and, like, experience all things as a normal person, you know? So, that... And then, well, white people, they kind of... I would say that sometimes I think that white people... Unfortunately, there's a lot of the history of their own country that they don't know. Or, like, they just kind of, like, just think it's a very small part. Like, I, like, how do you not really understand what the Civil War is about? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's certain things that they talk about, like, states' rights, and I'm like, what? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, and I kind of feel like sometimes they don't know their own history and, like, how closely intertwined, like, you are to, like, these black people and, like, these Chinese Americans, these Japanese Americans, and Native Americans, like, they're a huge part of your history. Isn't it weird that, like, America all of a sudden became the richest country in the world? Like, you know what I mean? There's certain things that I'm like, I feel like I know more than you about your own country or your own self. Like, I feel like there's something about, like, white ignorance that leads to you not knowing about their own selves and, like, having people of color actually know you more, you know?
I think that's the some people are afforded that opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, they just have a different lens.
Yeah.
You know, like the the little brother, big brother symptom of I know exactly what you went through because it's, you know, I grew up watching shows that depicted your lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
and I've read your books and your adventures. I've seen you fall in love. I've
seen every episode of Friends.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, yeah, so I understand, yeah, 100%. That's their perspective. And then I guess, you know, from my personal experience, I've found it, I've struggled with, as an artist, that certain people want to project how, you know, my story should go based on my ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and they do it from a place, like, they do it from a good place.
Yeah.
It's from compassion, but... As an artist, you should only serve the story.
Oh.
And if we should all agree with that, right? No matter what background, I don't care if you're from Spain, Africa,
yeah.
Canada, we should all... And so sometimes that gets diluted because you're projecting something onto me,
mm-hmm.
of what you want me to be or what I should be,
yeah.
to fit your narrative and to make you feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess if we're going to go back to favorites or the... We were on books. So I did books and movies, and then a favorite album. It's a tough one, but
a song.
Oh, I
know. Artist.
I can't pick a song.
You can praise Kanye again.
I can praise Kanye again, and that's cool. He's great. He's definitely done. I'll say this: Kanye and Radiohead. Kanye and Radiohead, specifically In Rainbows, Radiohead is my favorite because I think that's like, I don't really like their earlier stuff because they're not really good musicians. They weren't. The music wasn't that really like great. Like, I understand why people loved it so much because it's good for that time. But I feel like the things that last longer, like their later stuff into like the 2000s and everything. And Kanye. I think Kanye is super important because he came at a perfect time when it was kind of this like gap between like gangster rap and like conscious rap, and he kind of like brought those two things together because they weren't really that different at the end of the day, except for, you know, a few things. But and also like he kind of forced people to recognize rap as like a very, very high form of music, like not just like something that like the youth are listening to, but like we're gonna put an orchestra in this song, and like we're gonna do all these things like actual musicianship. And not saying that previous producers or whatever didn't have musicianship, it's just that like he put it in your face and he made sure that you understood that this is like, this is an opera in a way, you know. And that's what I think I appreciate most, because now like people, the way people look at rap is like very different than the way people looked at rap in like 1998. Like there's still great music that like Tribe Called Quest and using jazz samples that are like really complex and cool and all that stuff, but it just seemed like the, because of how adamant he was about his music and where it should be put, and like his ego, which kind of helped propel his music, I think. Like his ego, while it's hurt him a lot in different situations, but it's also made people recognize who he is without being like cast aside. So
I think the point, regardless of how people feel about him, is that you have to say like, here's somebody that is, he's doing what he wants to do. As opposed to being a bandwagoner and increasing the volume of something that's already there.
Exactly.
That's huge. Okay, so one final thing. So folks that are listening to this that may be in a situation where they're kind of in a rut, or you know, are feeling inspired about, you know, your this balance of, you know, of intellectual curiosity blending with technology and creativity, and which is a hard thing to do. You know, what would be some final things that you would say to somebody listening of, you know, how to I guess, you know, to kind of flip back of some of the videos that you would see, like, oh, just go for it or whatever. you know, people who are struggling with, you know, balancing so much, you know, we all live our lives are so complex.
Yeah.
What are some things that you've learned that has helped you kind of keep those balances?
You have to know yourself. You have to know what you enjoy and what is really you, or else you're going to feel like you're wasting time. Two, it helps to be in an environment where you can kind of do those things. Like, I'm not, like, it's hard to just be a multifaceted person when there's no real avenue to explore that. So you want to, I think it's helpful to actually put yourself in a place where you can do these things, where you can interact with people and there's different kinds of people. It helps to be in a diverse area, or else you're going to feel a little stymied. You're going to feel like there's nowhere to go and everything like that. So try to find some kind of structure so that you can be dynamic, as weird as that sounds. But like a little bit of structure will help you focus and concentrate on things that you actually like want to concentrate on, instead of like kind of flailing and like feeling like you're half doing this and half doing that. So I mean, it's tough. I'm not gonna say it's easy, but I think the reward is great, because you're gonna stick out and like actually be yourself, and like you never, I don't know, I think when you become a dynamic person and multifaceted, then like you allow yourself opportunities that aren't always, that you can't always see when it's like immediately.
Awesome. Yeah. Bobby, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, I had so much fun. Sweet listeners, as I always say, you're a part of this conversation too. You're just on the quiet side. So I appreciate you. Bodhisattva, go out and do good in the world. Thanks, everybody.